This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 29th of January. And is it just me, or is it a bit of a weird Friday because we had the time for some holiday yesterday? I was already in the weekend mode, but I still had one day left to work.
Yes, it was quite funny actually because I checked my alarm to make sure it was on for today, just in case I missed that, right? So so it feels a bit strange. I wish it was the other way around, like today's Thai Pusam, and we can have that long weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Nevertheless, it is still going to be a very interesting Friday. And we do have a bunch of things to talk about, don't we, this morning, Noel?
Yeah, so at 6:30, we're going to be looking into COVID-19, more so the vaccine. And also we're trying to get an update on what Biden has been up to since he's come into office.
And of course, later on at about 6:45, we're going to be looking at our papers and portals to see what's happening on the local front. What about in around 10 minutes or so?
Right. So this has really been interesting to me, right? The cities where Americans will move if they can work from home forever. I guess I'm talking about myself and for you as well, right? Where would we move to if we could?
Interesting stuff. So if you want to weigh in on our conversations, you can WhatsApp us. The number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us over at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're asking you whether the pandemic has changed your views on work and your purpose in your workplace. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was All the Way from Memphis by Mott the Hoople, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Noel. So there is a McKinsey study that has said that about 20% of the global workforce could work from home 3 to 5 days a week going forward. So, it's not likely that we as a society is going to snap back to the way things once were pre-COVID-19 immediately. And the BBC has an interesting article asking, how have, your views, or how have our views on work changed, and how have they changed in the long term as a result of this pandemic? So, for some people, working from home has cut out a very stressful commute. So it's suddenly like, this eureka moment of, why have I been spending 3 hours in a car or a train every day to commute to this one place when I could have been doing it all from the comfort of my own four walls? But of course, other people have maybe find it a little bit more stressful. If you have children, for example, it could be a little bit more difficult to find that balance between work and home life, particularly if you find it hard to switch off.
Yes. So I think it's true that it's unlikely that we are going to go back to the old way of doing things or old ways of working unless your employer compel you to come back to work. Because I think two things are happening. As long as children cannot go to school, they have to study online. I think parents, or at least the mother, will feel compelled to need to stay at home to supervise the household. And secondly, I think, then employees may say, well, COVID-19 isn't over yet. The vaccine hasn't come to my doorstep yet. So I it's not safe for me to come out, and I may have an elderly parent at home. So, as an employer, how do you compel them to come back to work, right? So I think things are going to stay like this for now. So BBC Work Life had spoken to a range of readers. I think, like, for example, this person from India said that the whole purpose of life seems to have changed. So has the purpose of work. And then another respondent said that he's actually thrilled to be in this new environment. I've never been more happy and stress-free in my life, because when you reclaim back 1 hour of that commute, you can now go and exercise, you can go and do a hobby, you can take a bit more time with your breakfast.
Yep, there was once a time where I used to leave office at 5:30 and get home at 7:30 because of the massive traffic jam that I would hit every single day. And if I was going from that kind of an environment to an environment where those 2 hours were mine to do with what I would, I would find it a lot more liberating. But then this is also coming from a place where I don't have to supervise children, overseeing online learning. I don't have to take care of aged parents, which are all the kinds of things that you have to balance a lot of the times now when you are also working from home. Because if you have dependents in the home, you can't exactly close the door and say, okay, for the next 9 hours, nobody speak to me because I'm going to be working. It doesn't work that way.
Yes. So I think we are learning how to juggle so many things, right? So on this thing about mothers, right, I believe they should win that Time People of the Year award, because when I see them loading up stuff in the supermarket, they're looking so harried. I really don't blame them, right? Because, you know, there's just so many things going on and they have to get it all done quickly, you know, and following all the SOPs in the public space. Okay, so I think for myself, I find that my relationship towards work has become more intense now that I split my time between BFM and doing other things. So that was last year, really quite intense because working from home, right? Mm-hmm. Now I have learned to prioritize so that I de-intensify my work, if that makes sense. So that I can, you know, I don't split myself too thin. So that in that sense, I think my relationship has maybe evolved or it has been refined.
Yeah, I think for me, honestly, I don't think that that much has changed, mostly because we as essential services, we're still coming in every other week. And for the most part, you know, media doesn't sleep. So we do spend a fair bit of time, even outside normal working hours, you know, searching for news, thinking about the news, thinking about, you know, who can we get on the show the next day. So that hasn't really abated. But what I do find is that it has made me view my home space a little bit differently, because I start to prioritize, okay, you know, areas where I can work comfortably and where I can also walk away. You know, so you have, like, say I work at the dining table. At the end of my work day, I get up from the dining table, I move to the couch. You know, just to have that sense of separation. And it's all artificial, realistically. But it's because we don't have that daily commute to act as a bookend for your working hours. You have to kind of create that for yourself, even if just mentally.
Yeah, so my friend, her day end would be going to do some exercise. Mm-hmm. So that's her way of marking, okay, this is like I'm doing my commute to go home. So exercise is her replacement of that routine.
Go walk for 10 minutes. Yes, that's your commute.
Right. Yeah, that's your commute, right? It feels like you're commuting somewhere. I think in terms of purpose, it hasn't really changed much, I guess. It's more like now, you know, like I talk about BFM. Am I here to just dispense news, read out the scripts written by the producers, or, you know, here to make a genuine difference? I think that's always something that is a balancing game, right? When we talk about our mission, what first world mindset, of course, I cannot be presumptuous to know what that really means. I think it's something that I'm just still learning.
Yeah, I think it's a journey for all of us, right? But the question is, has the end goal shifted as a result of the pandemic? Maybe you find that you enjoy spending more time with your children working from home during this pandemic, you know, despite all of the disruption that it might also cause. Perhaps you're enjoying being able to reclaim the space in your home. Let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us how the pandemic has changed your purpose at work. Let us know. But right now, some messages, and up next, where you could move to if you could work from anywhere. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with Just Dropped In. And if you've just dropped in on the show this morning, you're here with Lynn and Noel, and this is The Morning Run. And we're looking at this article in Slate this morning, talking about where Americans might move if their jobs let them work from anywhere. Because this is a bit of an extension of our earlier discussion, the fact that so many people are now working from home. And this article is quite interesting. It talks about the incentives that many big cities put in place to attract big companies to come and set up shop in their locales. So, for example, in the US, every large city almost offered great incentives to try and compete for Amazon's second headquarters. And eventually, Amazon settled for I believe it was DC and New York City. But that competition, are we going to see that sort of competition moving forward? Because particularly these large multinationals, right? Most of them are the ones that have the ability to transition their workers to a more work from home and flexible lifestyle. The question is whether or not, of course, they will continue to do that maybe in 2 years or so once the pandemic hopefully by then has settled down. And it's also asking the question of whether or not this will see an outflow of people from these big, expensive cities where you've moved to be within that hour commute from your workplace to places like in the US, it would be the Sun Belt, right? Here it might be states a little bit further afield, not necessarily within Selangor and the Klang Valley.
Yeah, so this article does provide a critique of some past practices of cities where they try to offer low tax rates, very beautiful beaches and all that, and even I think the taxpayers in that particular state may be subsidizing even things like stadiums as well, some very unproductive assets. So now he's questioning, should cities continue on that trend? Because he asks this question, right? If remote work has become a reality and if the workers don't have to follow the company, then why should cities fight for it? And if the company does not need geographic access to great workers, why set up shop in a big city? So I guess there are a lot of questions here, right? I think even for me, when I look at my own lifestyle, where would I like to go? I think, somewhere safe, obviously, somewhere with fast internet still and, reliable utilities. But I think what would be, if I have all that, and I think what is appealing for me to want to get out of KL will be, cooler air, more green, closer to nature, like, water, a waterfall or a beach or, a river that you can just float along. Like in Kuala Kubu Baru.
I'm now just imagining you kind of like bobbing gently down
the stream. Yes, that's right. The stream to nowhere on this tube thing, okay. Like a tire tube.
Yeah. So for me, it's a little bit more. I don't really know whether I would move out of the city because I've been a city girl, kind of born and bred. So I enjoy the kind of the hustle and bustle. But of course, expense is a big thing because property is expensive. It's very difficult to afford something, within some of the more packed central zones, in KL, in PJ. So going further afield, if more people are moving out, if developers are also prioritizing things like green spaces, right, which you see more of in suburban areas, if the green spaces and the amenities and the internet connection is there, I also don't really see, I don't really see why not at this point, because at the end of the day, what is your aim? Your aim is not necessarily to, in the long term, to be within half an hour of your workplace. Your aim is to have a good quality of life. And ideally, you're able to find that within, right now at least, within a reasonable radius of your office. But in the longer term, especially if you have children who are going to be going to school, a lot of families will want children to grow up in a space where you can walk out, you can go outside and play without fear, which is something that you can't do, necessarily do, particularly if you're in a condo in the middle of a city.
Yeah, so I think when you mention quality of life, I think relationships is going to form a big part of it, right? If you can still stay connected with your friends in some ways, that is still going to be very important. And so this article in Slate, it does like sort of reach that conclusion almost that, I think one of the main considerations would be when you move, will you be moving with pockets of like-minded citizens? Mm. Or will you have to completely uproot and just make new friends all over again? That can be quite unsettling. And that might be that final straw, right? That will, tilt your decision whether you want to move or, where you want to move to.
Yeah, that's true. Because a sense of community is very important to many people, right? Even if you're a very introverted person. So I don't particularly socialize much. But what I like about where I live is that I'm within 10 minutes of pretty much every member of my family in the country. So that sense of community is still there. And if you were to move out to, some random kind of town, which is about more than let's say an hour out from the rest of your community, and you're doing that alone, then that can be quite a daunting prospect.
Yeah, so I think, at one point last year, I did consider, could I just move to Cameron Highlands for 1 month, 3 months, obviously not somewhere overseas, but, just within the country or Kuala Kubu Baru or somewhere by the beach in Penang. Then I calculated the cost and it was just cheaper to stay at home.
Yeah, yeah. You know, actually, I happened to see some artist residencies on Facebook being advertised, which come with a small stipend. And you go and you stay in this place in what looks like surrounded by greenery and jungle to produce artworks, whether that's written or, you know, visual art. And I thought, wow, that sounds really cool. Would I do it if, of course, I had the talent and the, you know, to be accepted?
I was going to say, you can do it. I will be like, I'll have to fake this one.
No, but like, it's an interesting thought, because would I take those 3 months out to go and live in kind of surrounded by greenery with a group of, in this case, it would be a group of like-minded people, right? Because you're all kind of geared towards the same thing. And I think I would be interested to give it a try. I guess it is true that sense of community is very important. But let us know what you think and tell us where you would move to if you could work from anywhere. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 news now, and to take you there is Dancing in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Rocks by Primal Scream, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim. We have had a very interesting WhatsApp in from a listener this morning talking about, you know, we were discussing where you would move to if you could work from anywhere, right? And this listener has said, I asked for a transfer to Kuala Pilah last month because I'm sick of my predictable COVID in KL life. So I will let you know how it goes when I survive the wilderness. And this person has sent us a number of pictures, including of their potential new home in the wilderness / rainforest / kampung.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, it's I mean, I wouldn't
mind moving there.
I would be interested to see how this goes. This person also sent a picture, though, of their stroke patient checking out the wild boars, apes, and black panther in their new backyard. So, good luck with that. hopefully, it will be a little bit more of a restful time and you won't spend that time stressed out about the wild animals in your backyard.
Yeah, but it's so nice to be just out in nature instead of seeing all these steel buildings.
Yeah, yeah, no, the real jungle over the concrete jungle anytime. So anyway, this morning we are also looking at what's been happening around the world. And of course, what day would be complete without a discussion of the COVID-19 vaccine? Because the EU, it appears, could block millions of COVID vaccine doses from entering the UK, because Brussels said it has yet to respond as well to shortages emerging in some member states. They've seen, I believe, a lack of doses in some EU countries. So it's the European Commission says it's going to be giving national regulators the power to reject export requests.
Yeah, so I guess this is where we're starting to see diplomacy might start to deteriorate over vaccines, right? So the EU says it is ready to use all legal means to retain vaccine supplies in the region, stepping up its threat to block even exports of Pfizer jabs to the UK if necessary. So I think the news reports have cited this based on a leaked letter that was sent by several officers to the European Council president, revealing that Brussels is exploring urgent measures to ensure effective vaccine production and supply for their population. So as what we understand now is, I think UK is trying to calm everyone down, and they say that it could send its vaccine supplies to the EU once their most vulnerable people have been inoculated. I guess I can imagine why the EU is under pressure, right, to do something, because I think when they just look at the statistics, I think in EU itself, only 2% of people have been vaccinated, and they're quite behind compared to the UK, where I think 13% of the population have been given a jab.
Yeah, I think the UK's vaccination program has really picked up steam since it started. If I'm not mistaken, a few days ago, I saw reports that they'd actually managed to hit their inoculation of, was it 300,000 a day? Something like that. But in parts of the EU, countries like Germany, for example, are lagging behind their initial targets for their inoculation drives. And a part of this has been because of fears of shortages. And it's just an unfortunate fact, right? When you have every country in the world depending on three, four, five major vaccine candidates, there is going to be a lot of pressure on these companies to produce millions upon millions of vaccine doses within a short period of time. So they're certainly in the spotlight now. So that's going to be something that we're going to be taking close watch on. But taking a look as well at the US. So the US under its new president, Joe Biden, has appeared to take aim as well at some territorial claims made by China. So Joe Biden has vowed to strengthen the US's alliance with Japan in order to counter Chinese military activity in the Asia-Pacific region, including around the Senkaku Islands. So this is a group of islands in the East China Sea that is administered by Tokyo, but claimed by Beijing.
Yeah, so US President Joe Biden spoke with his Japanese counterpart, Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, on Thursday and reaffirmed the security alliance that commits the US to defending Japan's territory. And he's invoking this the fact that US is really committed to the defense of Japan under Article 5 of their security treaty, which includes those islands. Those are very remote islands, right? But we know it's not just about the island, it's really about the sea and the kind of resources mm-hmm. that go with it.
It is. And the dispute over the Senkaku Islands in the East China Sea is actually pretty similar to what we see here in the South China Sea, because we also see this dispute over a group of islands, you know, but mostly it's a lot of it surrounds the ability to mine the seas surrounding for resources. So the attention that Joe Biden is paying towards Japan, it could be an indication as to what we might expect as well here in the South China Sea. But of course, here it's a little bit more complicated because you have six countries all kind of vying for these resources. But the US up until President Donald Trump had made many commitments towards freedom of navigation, particularly in this region, because the South China Sea does see a majority of global tanker trade. So it's how that is going to develop under this new administration is also something that I'm sure all of the countries in this part of the world are going to be, you know, hanging on to see what we can expect.
Yeah, so Biden's recognition of the Senkakus is probably likely to escalate tensions with Beijing, right? So, and what we know is that last week, China passed a legislation that authorizes its coast guards to fire on any foreign ships that come into that territory. So there we go again. Nothing changes, right, in terms of foreign policy when it comes to the South China Sea.
No, certainly not. So these are all issues that we're going to be watching quite closely. But we are turning our attention next to what's been happening on our own local papers and portals. If you would like to weigh in on these conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 0187-89-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But right now, some messages for you. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Shout to the Top by The Style Council, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim. It is 6:50 in the morning, Friday the 29th of January, and we are looking at our front pages of the papers and portals this morning to see what's been happening in our local news. Noel, you have the NST in front of you. What's happening there?
Well, it has on his front page, it says extend it. And they are really referring to the MCO because NST spoke to a few experts and they say the MCO must continue at least the end of February to have any effect on flattening the curve and to ensure past efforts do not go to waste. I think this is really in response to the fact that we are still seeing like 4,000 or more cases a day, like yesterday. And so it is unrealistic to expect that number of cases to go down so quickly, and maybe it's more prudent to actually just extend the MCO to give us and the healthcare system more breathing space.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance though, isn't it? Because the longer that the MCO carries on, the harder it is going to be on businesses as well. So the government is trying to strike that balance, and I don't envy them. There's no playbook that they have for this kind of a situation. Yesterday, Malaysia saw 4,094 cases, which brings our total cases to actually just shy of 200,000 there were also 10 deaths yesterday, so that is unfortunately very tragic. The Star's front page is crackdown on violators, forgers. So this is talking about the fact that police will respond to calls for increased enforcement in public places because of a spike in SOP violations during these nationwide movement controls. And apparently there's also a new problem. syndicates, which are forging COVID-19 test results in order for people to travel overseas. So this is very alarming because right now, you know, the COVID-19 test results are the only thing that we have in order to ensure that someone to trust that someone does not have the virus. If the trust of that test result is thrown into question, then, you know, there's really what other alternative do we have at this point?
Yeah. So, you know, that this thing about not traveling abroad is also meant to help us, right? I mean, help the person who wants to travel abroad, mm-hmm. because unless you have a very, very strong reason, like you need to see a sick relative, you know, staying in the country, it's just safe for you, right? Instead of getting onto the plane and going to another country which has more COVID-19 cases.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that apparently between January 20th and 25th, the police arrested six men in connection with selling these forged COVID-19 test result slips. So hopefully the police can indeed crack down on this and that we won't see this becoming a bigger problem in the future. Now, the Malay Mail has an interesting article as well on their kind of lead story. So they're talking about politics because despite the fact that, you know, there's been a call for all the politicking to cease as a result of the emergency order, etc. You know, we can't stop our politicians from doing what they do best. And this story here is past MIC feud could put BN Muafakat in a bind, say analysts. So this is something that this is talking about the quarrel between PAS and MIC that may hurt Muafakat Nasional and Perikatan Nasional in the long run, particularly in mixed ethnicity seats at the next general election, whenever that might be. So kind of tensions over this have boiled over this month after, I believe it was the PAS Menteri Besar of Kedah, made the decision to forgo a state holiday for the Taipusam religious festival that happened yesterday. So this obviously engendered a lot of resentment and unhappiness as a result of that.
Yeah, so we're speaking about Taipusam. I think the temples in Perak and Penang, according to NSD, they observe SOP to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. I think it's the second time in over 50 years a Taipusam celebration was a quiet affair in Penang. And so there were no signs of processions, for example. I guess we just have to make some sacrifices this year.
The procession that to the Batu Caves was allowed to go ahead, though, I believe.
Yes,
right?
I guess because that's a major location.
But I think it was still a very much a muted celebration, if what I remember from Anwar Musa's announcement was true.
Yeah, compared to previous years. So, people who love to go to Pasar Malam, people like me, apparently night market traders, are hoping that the Federal Territories Minister, Tan Sri Anwar Musa's directive for the night market standard operating procedures to be ready was a sign of their imminent comeback. So, according to sources, it was believed that the market's operations could be reinstated on February 2nd, 2 days ahead of the scheduled end of this MCO.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, certainly, as to what we can expect out of the end date of this MCO. Whether or not it'll be extended remains to be seen. Right now, we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then after that, we're bringing you more business news and analysis, so be sure to stay tuned. But first, here is Jamming by Bob Marley and the Wailers, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.